podcasts start with a sponsorship message. This episode was sponsored by listeners like you. If you'd like to sponsor Nerd and Tie, go to GoFundMe.com/Nerd and Tie and contribute to our legal fund. Darkness, the night, your help. All of these things are needed for justice.
On this Fortnite's edition of Nerd and Tie, we talk about Lego Batman. Ben Affleck stepped away from his expression of a sex Batman. We've got con news and a big full mailbag on this Fortnite's Nerd and Tie.
Oh boy. So, if you couldn't hear that intro, because Nick, for some reason, we don't care. You can just guess what's on the show.
I don't know why I always have trouble talking over the intro. I swear to God, I was regularly yelling it.
I know, it was great. Anyways, Nick, pretend I didn't interrupt you and introduce us.
All right, whatever. Welcome to another Fortnite's edition of Nerd and Tie. All you lovely people at home in this super Legoized edition. I am one of your three hosts. I am, of course, Nick Izumi, the minifigure that comes with every kit. Only available in those in that one really expensive kit we've got, Gen.
Yeah.
Because she's a girl, at least apparently.
Not coming out until wave two of our Lego kits is Trey.
I'm actually cobbled together from pre-existing parts of the pirate ones and then a couple of the town characters. It's
You know, you'd think Lego would have gotten beyond that, but Winter Soldier's head is literally the same as Star-Lord's head in Lego.
Of course it. Well, I mean
So, I just thought I'd throw that out. They have different hair. That's it.
So the only issue I have though with Legos is going from like the clearly Caucasian Legos to the yellow Legos, the yellow people. I don't understand. Yeah. Some of the licensed stuff gets the yellow heads, and some of it gets like the racially identifiable heads.
Yeah.
They used to all be yellow when the Star Wars kit started, and now they've done racially identifiable.
And like in the Ninjago movie trailer, it's like a mixture.
Yeah. Awkward.
I once had a 6-year-old try to explain Ninjago to me, and I still don't get it.
The Ninjago. So have you seen the trailer for the Ninjago movie?
The movie.
No, but I kind of know what it is.
I know nothing about Ninjago. I want to see that movie because Dave Franco is the talented of the Franco brothers.
Honestly, same. I know nothing about Ninjago, but the movie looks hilarious. So,
But
it looks like it's a well done thing. So,
before we get excited about things, though, Nick.
Yeah, let's take it back. We got some sad news. To start off the show. Unfortunately, sci-fi actor, or at least well, beloved character actor, and of course, sci-fi. At least known for. One particular sci-fi series that he was in both iterations of, Richard Hatch, passed away this last week. Hatch is one of those few people who was in both Battlestar Galactica's as the original Captain Apollo in the classic series and as the treacherous Tom Zarek in the 2004 remake. Really great part, incidentally. It is a real shame to lose such a talented actor. And, of course, we here at Nerd and Tie send the best wishes to his family and those who survived him. Because, yeah, great actor. Sad to see him go.
Yeah, he was a huge proponent of Battlestar Galactica. Like, before the 2004 remake, he kept pushing to, like, get remakes and sequel series done. Like, he actually shot, like, this fan film kind of, like, pseudo-pilot to try to get it picked up. By a network. It's out there. I forget what it's called. I watched it years ago. You know, the funny thing is initially he was actually really unhappy with the Battlestar Galactica reboot, but he came around and then got brought in as, because, you know, the Battlestar Galactica reboot first came out as like the miniseries, I think in 2003,
right,
before the 2004 regular full series version of it. And that's when, in the first season of the full series, is when he got involved as Tom Zarek, the terrorist turned politician turned just kind of creepy dude. He was so good. He was so good.
Yeah, it was a great part, and he played it really well.
So, it's,
but yeah, it's a really shame to see him go.
Yeah. That's,
it's always a shame, but.
Yeah, and so that's, we're going to start you out there with that little bit of disappointment and sadness, and then move swiftly and quickly onto something a little bit more happy.
Only a little bit more?
Significantly happier, because this last weekend, obviously, the Lego Batman movie hit theaters, and holy crap, I want to say that, you know, in this was in fact the best Batman movie that has ever been made.
Everything is once again awesome, dare I say,
because it brings Batman is fun again.
It really, it's, oh wait, darkness. It was a good movie. I really liked it. I like being in it too. Shut up. It was my movie. It was really good. No.
Well, it's I love everything. I love Rosario Dawson as Barbara Gordon. I'm gonna get this line partially wrong, but I'm not a Batman hater, but we really don't need a grown man in a Halloween costume running around punching people.
God, it was great also because pot shots were taken at literally every other iteration of Batman ever put to screen. They even took a pot shot at Suicide Squad, which made me quite happy.
Yeah.
And I loved just some of the, there were some jokes that I don't, that, like, even I was like, wow, that is an obscure joke.
There
I
were
am
deep
shocked.
Cuts. There were deep cuts. I was disappointed there was only one reference to the old serials.
Mm.
But, yeah, no.
But there still was a
But there was still a reference to the old serials that most people don't know even existed. Oh, man, like, those were, oh, like,
it's super funny. It's super worth your time if anyone's curious. It's easily the best thing DC has done since 2008.
Oh my god, like, it's, it, after watching like so many like dark Batman, like, okay, so like, I love a lot of Batman stuff, like, don't get me wrong, Chris Nolan made some good movies.
Mm-hmm.
He made two good movies, and then a third one happened.
Agreed.
And I'm gonna say though that like his movies had like, it was the same pattern as Transformers, where the first one was great and the second one, well, the second was still like, it's not as bad as Transformers with the how fast the thing went downhill, but like, a lot of people applaud The Dark Knight. I like The Dark Knight. I'm not talking smack about it, but for me, the version of the Joker that I grew up with, the definitive version of the Joker for me in my head, is a pre-killing joke Joker. It is, you know, my version of the Joker is not as dark. And so, like, I always, like, my favorite on-screen Joker is going to always be Cesar Romero. It's, and so, like,
mine is always going to be Hamill, but he's still a lot.
Oh, Hamill's phenomenal. I love Hamill's Joker. But it's, my point is that, while I think Heath Ledger did an amazing job and did a legitimate interpretation of the Joker, his version of the Joker is not the version that I love.
I agree.
So that's why I love Batman Begins way more than I love The Dark Knight. Even if no one in Batman Begins can pronounce Ra's al Ghul to save their life,
which they can't. But I still, yeah, of the three movies, it's also my favorite.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed everything about that movie. It was good to have, and I mean, like, I can deal with, I like Dark Batman now.
Yeah, no.
I mean, I still pick up the DC straight-to-video DVD movies, you know, and I enjoyed, I enjoyed Batman versus Robin. I enjoyed Batman Bad Blood. I've enjoyed those. But I don't always need Batman to be dark and brooding all the time.
Right. Right. I grew up with Adam West Batman as a kid. Like, that was, you know, I was nine when, either eight or nine when Tim Burton's 89 Batman came out. I just don't remember what the release date was in the year. But that's the year I turned nine. I even love the original The Dark Knight Returns comics.
Mm-hmm.
I fully embrace that the dark version of Batman is a very recognizable, great version of the character, but it's not the version that, like, the childhood me that made the Batman I dressed up as when I was six to go trick-or-treating was the Adam West Batman.
Dark Batman is legitimate, but it's no more legitimate than Adam West Batman,
right,
than Kevin Conroy Batman, than Dietrich Bader Batman, or, of course, stuck-up jackass Lego Batman.
Well, and that's... yeah, and I love Kevin Conroy's The Batman the Animated Series Batman. I think that's also great. He was... See, that's... I love that... that's a version of Batman I want to see more of, because he was... Mm-hmm. He was serious. He wasn't dark. He was serious.
Well, thankfully, we are getting more of that because Conroy came back for Justice League Action, which is on Cartoon Network right now.
Yeah.
So we're getting that Batman is back.
Like,
we got a very nice deconstruction
in
this movie. And, of course, in earlier in the animated Return of the Caped Crusaders with Adam West was another great deconstruction. I'm happy to see DC willing to say, you know what? There's more to Batman than broodingest.
Right.
And we especially needed that after last year's Batman v Superman.
Well, I feel like the movies always drop off. This is a pattern in films that this is thankfully being dealt with. There are two characters in comics who are the most notorious compulsive adoptive fathers in all of comics, and they are Bruce Wayne and Wolverine. If you go into the comics, they are the two guys who, like, oh, there is a small child. I will take them in. I will teach them the ways.
I feel would try to one-up each other at fatherness.
That's how you knew Batman v Superman was off to the wrong start, was if the movie was done right, in that scene with Bruce Wayne hugging that little girl in the rubble, the first thing he should have said to her isn't, I'm sorry about your mom. It should have been, your name is Robin now.
I'm going to keep you. What's your name? Stephanie Brown? Great. There.
Exactly.
Origin story. Jesus Christ. I mean, that doesn't really mesh with the actual Stephanie Brown origin remotely, I know. But
whatever. You know, Lego Batman didn't care about the origin.
Carrie, whatever.
Lego Batman didn't care about the origin of Dick Grayson or Barbara Gordon, but it still made that important point that, yeah, Batgirl and Robin are important parts of the Batman mythos.
Yeah.
They should be there.
Yeah.
They really should be there.
Yeah, you know, it didn't show us the flying Graysons dying, but... He was still an orphan.
He was dorkier than I normally imagined Dick Grayson. And considering how dorky I imagine Dick Grayson, that says a lot.
Oh, that was... I mean, honestly, that was the part Michael Cera was born to play.
Right?
Oh, it was so great. It's... oh, no. It's like, I cannot sing the praises of this film enough. And it is... You know, it is Lego Batman, so it is in many ways a sequel to the Lego movie in the sense that it takes place in that Legoized reality. So there are references to the fact, like, Batman has to be use his master builder skills.
Mm.
And obviously, it gets to pull in from every IP that Lego can access, with the exception of the Marvel stuff.
Although... Batman's password.
Batman's password to authorize entrance to the Batcave is it Iron Man sucks?
It's Iron Man sucks, yeah. That was
cool. Oh, it's... Yeah, so I think our official recommendation is go see the Lego Batman movie if you're a true Batman fan. Because, by the way, there are such deep cuts into that rogues gallery, too. And I...
Crazy Quilts, Kite Man, Eraser.
I liked seeing Eggman and King Tut.
Uh-huh, that was great. Oh, the mutant leader from The Dark Knight Returns and Blight from Batman Beyond cameoed even.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
I love Killer Croc saying, "I did something."
I loved when Joker lists off all the C-list villains and the security guards are like, "Are you making some of those up?" "Nope, they're all real."
Well,
Google
because
it.
Like Condiment King is real. Condiment King is a real Batman. He was created by Bruce Timm and Paul Dini. He was created in Batman the Animated Series, but he's canonical.
And he crossed over into Freakazoid one time. True story. Warner Brothers is weird, but
like,
yeah,
he has appeared in the in the actual comics too. Like he was in Batgirl Year One.
Mm-hmm.
Like
that's a good comic. I recommend that comic. Oh, Killer Moth got to even do stuff in this movie.
Right, but
I love Killer Moth.
I feel like Killer Moth's not as much a deep cut as Condiment King.
No, and that's
Eggman.
True.
Eggman.
God, they made a Jim Cotta joke, guys. They made a Jim Cotta joke.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
No, yeah, go see this movie. It's so worth your time. It's so good.
It's
so
amazing.
Funny.
It is. Oh. We're gonna hit people so hard that words expressing, like making, explaining sound effects of what we just did are gonna spontaneously appear in the air over us.
If the movie, the closest thing I'd say that the movie has to a problem is that there are so many sight gags on screen, you have to watch it a second time.
And IO9 said that is a problem. Like, there's so many jokes you won't catch. I'm like, what are you talking about? That's why you watch something more than once.
That sarcastically, I don't seriously see it as a problem.
See, like, I love comedies that do that. Like, I've watched every episode of Community multiple times, and on each viewing, I catch a joke I didn't get the first three times or something. And that's what this is. And it's like, so you can enjoy it without catching every joke, but you're going to get jokes the second time through. Like, I don't know, I was in a theater with a lot of people in it, so, like, there were a lot of laugh-out-loud moments, including, you know, but you start with laugh-out-loud within the first 5 minutes of the film, like, you know, with...
Seconds of film, honestly.
But like when the pilot on the plane mentioned the two boats.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when have it ever succeeded? Like, the Batman beats you every time, and they start listing out examples, but he starts with, like, what, that time with the two boats? This is totally different!
This is totally... What about the time you had the parade and the Prince music?
Yeah!
No. Go see this
go
movie,
see the
everybody.
Lego Batman movie. And that's... Like, there's a reason why we made it our title card, which I'm just gonna briefly put up here for just one more second.
Look at that. Look at us in our Lego glory. I love it.
You can assemble these people today. If you have a lot of Legos.
I'd say, if you have the Legos to assemble those characters, I heartily encourage you to do so.
If you feel like making a Lego us, please take a photo.
And we will post it on our site.
Yes. We will. Seriously, we would love to see that.
At the very least, our Facebook page.
Yes.
All right, well, I think we've sung the praises of the best Batman movie in a very long time quite a bit.
I do want to say one thing, that this is, you know, Batman versus Superman. I know we've kind of been critical on that, but I do want to say that some of the best parts of that movie were Ben Affleck as Batman.
Oh, yeah, that's not knock.
Yeah.
Batfleck himself.
Yeah.
The movie was bad. He wasn't.
And he is slated to star in the next Batman film that's going to come out sometime.
Eventually.
Today.
Eventually.
Probably.
But it was slated that he would both star and direct the film, which sounds like a lot of work, like too much. And so logically, like... With no reprimands, because this is a normal step to take and one he should take, Ben Affleck is stepping down from directing the Batman. So he's just going to focus on the acting portion and have someone else come in and do the directing, which I think is a smart idea. You don't want to overwhelm yourself, especially like doing films and trying to do everything yourself.
Yeah, I can't knock him for that.
We have to remember he's also producing. He also co-wrote the script. And Ben Affleck was talking in interviews about how he just felt like so much pressure because everyone no matter what he does, it's always gonna everyone's gonna compare it to their favorite one of the Nolan movies, right? Because regardless of, Lego Batman aside, out of serious Batman movies, the general consensus is that the two best Batman movies are The Dark Knight and Batman Begins. And so whichever camp you fall into, whatever he does, is going to get compared to that. And so...
Yeah, granted, those people are wrong because the best Batman movie is Mask of the Phantasm, but that's neither here nor there.
I've never actually seen Mask of the Phantasm.
It's a great movie.
I believe you.
It's a perfect Batman movie. You should see it. Or Under the Red Hood. Under the Red Hood is also perfect. Yeah, I said it. It's a good movie based on a bad comic.
Yeah.
I hear the words Red Hood, and I think, is that the one with Jason Todd?
That is the one with Jason,
Jason
Todd.
Jason Todd deserves to be dead. Jason Todd should always be dead. I refuse to believe that Jason Todd...
Jensen Ackles is Jason Todd.
If I want to hear Jensen Ackles badly voice a cartoon character, I can go watch the episodes of the Supernatural anime that he's in. He's not in all of them, just some of them.
To their credit, they did this movie before DC was doing their current stupid thing of trying to pretend Jason Todd was some sort of badass and was running and was playing him as, the idiot that he is, trying to solve crime by being a bigger criminal, because Jason Todd sucks and he always will.
Jason Todd is the worst. You know what the best part about Batman versus Superman is? It appears that Jason Todd is dead.
But back to Ben Affleck.
I like to think that in Lego Batman, Jason Todd died before the movie. Before ever becoming Robin.
Back to what Gen was saying, though, I'm totally with you, Gen, because I think Ben Affleck he is a very good director, he's a very good actor, but Trey was saying, it's huge. You're going to get compared to every other version of Batman. And especially right now, you're going to get compared to a plastic brick. So,
think about it. No one else, this is the Batman. No one's ever, gotten into a franchise like this and tried to both direct and star in it. Think about any major, any of these major tentpole films, be it from DC, from Marvel, in the history of these things, Henry Cavill wasn't about to try to direct Man of Steel, although it might have been a better movie. You don't imagine, there are other, can you imagine the tremendous pressure? It's no one else in these films ever tried to, none of these directors wanted to try to star in them, and none of these actors wanted to try to direct them. It's the amount of work that goes into something like this is just humongous. And it would just be insane.
But the hopeful thing about this whole thing is that since Ben Affleck is producing and writing and starring in it, he'll pick a director that also sees and shares his vision.
Right.
So I don't think I feel like the movie can't really get compromised from what he's trying to do very much.
Yeah,
and he cares about Batman. He cares way more than a lot of people involved do.
There have been some weird rumors that the studio wanted to replace the script, but they've come out and said that they still stand behind the script that that Affleck and Jeff Johns wrote together. And then a third writer whose name I forget, but is a frequent collaborator with Affleck, did a rewrite over it, just a pass over the script. He also did rewrites for Batman versus Superman, but that film can be entirely blamed on Zack Snyder and not on this guy. Yes. Batman versus Superman. Where the only nice thing that I've ever heard anybody say about the director's cut that who I respect is, well, the movie at least made sense now. It wasn't good. Like, if you delete scenes, I'm just saying, this is just for the record. Writers, directors, movie makers of America, if you delete a scene and your film doesn't make sense anymore, that is the scene you shouldn't have deleted. I shouldn't have to watch deleted scenes to understand your film.
There are big swaths of Batman v Superman that should have been deleted, and from the sounds of it, they weren't the scenes that were added to the... They
right.
weren't related to the things in the director's cut.
Well,
I'm not saying that it was the weird dream with the trench coat.
Oh, the weird dream with
the
trench coat. It was the dream.
The dream should have
gone
on the cutting
room
floor.
There are so many... It's because Zack Snyder can't string together a narrative. He can't. He is incapable of putting together a narrative. He doesn't... He is a brilliant visual director in the sense that he can get you that perfect shot that looks great, but he doesn't know how to put those shots together to make a story. I go back, like, if you look, even just to, not including stuff he leaves out of the films, but look at the stuff he put into the film. There is the best line in Batman versus Superman is when Superman asks who Wonder Woman is, and Batman turns and looks at him and says, "I thought she was with you." Like, it's a hilarious line until you think about the fact that Batman called her.
He sent her an email. He sent her a Facebook invite.
Yeah,
fighting
Batman.
Superman. Yes, maybe, no.
Batman.
She maybe.
Batman, she's with you. You asked her to come. Like, the line doesn't make sense because he's... You, Batman, you're the one who asked. She's with you, Batman. Stupid.
You literally sent her an email.
Like, so, and that's what it comes to. It's like, it's a great moment for the trailer. It is a great moment, but it's not as a narrative structure. It just, it doesn't connect or string together. And that's why, again, like, Zack Snyder can't tell a story. Zack Snyder can't tell a story.
Well, I have faith in Ben Affleck's Batman. I think he will tell a good story. We know elements of the story are kind of locked in since they've not only cast, but they kind of already have a Deathstroke costume ready to go. I mean, it'd be really awkward at this point. It's like, well, here's Slade. Like, how you doing,
buddy?
I will tell you,
Slade Wilson's really weird in Smallville.
Yeah, he's Colonel Ty.
I know. It's like suddenly, like, I just like literally in the last 2 weeks, I watched the entirety of Smallville from beginning to end.
Oh, dear God.
And, by the way, I love Cowboy Deadshot.
Cowboy Deadshot.
Yet another example of the Suicide Squad done better than the movie. How is it that everyone else does Suicide Squad better than the movie? Because Arrow did it better, Smallville did it better, the animated feature did it better.
That one episode of Justice League Unlimited did it better.
Everyone could...
And notice how it's always done better in one-off episodes that are anywhere from 20 minutes to an hour and 20 minutes long. Still better than a 2.5-hour movie. Let's take a minute to appreciate that.
Oh...
Oh, we should carnival of sadness. You did sneak in.
Oh, no. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. All right. So we should...
Dang it.
We should move on.
Yeah, let's look to the future.
Take us... Or the past. Or the present.
So, we, of course, in the world of Doctor Who, one of those things that is just part of being a Doctor Who fan is coming to terms with the fact that your doctor, no matter who they are, no matter how much you love them, is going to have to leave the show eventually. Well, we just got it confirmed recently that Peter Capaldi is following the trend set by David Tennant and Matt Smith. He's stuck around with the show for 2 seasons. He's doing series 10, his 3rd season. And then after 3 seasons, he is calling it quits. And he'll be regenerating into whoever comes next.
And we're not going to know who for a while.
Yeah,
because
that's weird.
Like, a lot of people, like when I first heard that he was stepping down, I assumed it was because they, like, knew who they were going to cast. Mm-hmm. As the replacement, but the new showrunner who's going to make the determination, because they're going to let the new showrunner cast the new part, hasn't started working yet. Like, the guy stepping in to replace Moffat has not done any work on the show yet, because he's thinking, I don't have to have anything shot until, like, I don't have anything airing until next spring, because Moffat's staying through the Christmas special. So... like,
then he's currently kind of, then he was busy with David Tennant doing season 2 of Broadchurch, from what I understand. So.
Yeah, but it means that, like, there we have, like, it's, this means that it was Capaldi wanting to step away, though. Like, this isn't a, like, he wasn't being, because there are rumors, like always with rumors when you change a showrunner in a show like Doctor Who, where you have regenerations, that they would want to do a regeneration with the new showrunner so the show could find its new voice. And, you know, it's Tennant was already, Tennant and Davies stepping away at the same time kind of timed out. Like, that was actually just more coincidental because both wanted to move on. Russell T. Davies, I know his partner's health was failing and stuff. So, like, and also he just was doing, like, 3 shows at once at the time. Because that's
Russell burned himself out.
Yeah,
bad.
Yeah, he did, because he was still doing Torchwood and Sarah Connor Chronicles after
Sarah Jane Adventures.
Look, there's time travel involved, and someone named Sarah. And I'm sorry,
Doctor Who, the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
I would watch that show. I would watch that show.
Cybertron Terminator.
Lena Headley takes the TARDIS. Although I would love to see Lena Headley as the new Doctor. I'm just saying.
I would love to see so many people as the new Doctor.
But, God, Sarah Jane Adventures. Those are, yeah, don't mix those two up if you're going to show something to your kids. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. My brain right now. I have not been getting good sleep. This is not my fault. There's a lot in this brain of science fiction trivia and history, and when I get tired, I word replace, and there was a Sarah, but yeah.
There's a lot.
No, go ahead, Jen.
Oh. No. I'm just saying there's a lot in this episode.
I guess this is though continuing that trend though, because the last two Doctors stuck around for 3 seasons and then they left. And yeah, I don't necessarily think it's a bad move on Capaldi's part. I'm personally sad because I adore his Doctor, but that's just me.
I just wanted him to stick around for 1 more season. Like, I didn't expect him to stay forever, but I wanted to see what he could do under a different showrunner.
Yeah,
and
that's fair.
That's really my whole... I mean, to be fair, with the exception of this last Christmas special, which I just didn't really like all that much because Stephen Moffat really wanted to write a 1940s Superman episode. Like...
starring Goku from Dragon Ball Evolution.
I have thoughts about that Christmas special, which are mostly that Stephen Moffat said, hey, I want to do a superhero show also... but I haven't watched anything about a superhero that was produced after 1975. that's really the impression that I got.
I haven't seen it yet. I just know that Goku from Dragon Ball Evolution is in it. So
it's very 1940s Superman. Like, it feels like every 90s. You know how, like, Dick Tracy tried to do a comic book movie?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say Daredevil, but, like, Schumacher Batman?
Oh.
It feels like Schumacher Batman.
Oh.
And the doctor just happens to be there.
Oh, dear.
It's... like, Capaldi's great for his parts.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got nothing against the actors in the episode, but it's just not a well-written episode. Mm. But anyways, that's a whole aside when I just wanted to say that the previous season of Doctor Who, Series 9, was phenomenal. And
right.
Actually,
so
like,
good.
Moffat did a good job with Series 9.
One of the best Davros episodes since the 70s, really.
Yeah. So I want to be clear, like, when I I'm highly critical of Stephen Moffat as a showrunner. I think that, I have no dislike of Matt Smith, and I thought Matt Smith was a very good doctor. I believe that the writing on the show did him a disservice. The pawn stuck around for far too long.
Yeah.
And I'm a person, I love Rory.
Mm-hmm.
I love Rory more than Rory. I love Rory. Rory's the best.
Right.
And I don't dislike Amy Pond. I don't dislike Amy Pond. But they really should have been gone half a season before they did. It's just that's like that whole first half.
I've said that a million times on this show. But
that whole first half of Matt Smith's
last season, series
is
seven.
Just like the Clara half is actually decent. But and they end on like the worst episode, I think, what I consider to be the worst episode of Moffat's run.
Angels Take Manhattan is
Angels
one of the
Take
worst
Manhattan
episodes
that
two-parter. In the entire history of Doctor
that is
Who.
Those are the worst episodes of Moffat's run. And then he Moffat got increasingly better once Clara got there, but Clara really didn't get good until Capaldi showed up, because that's when she stopped being a prop to the story. Matt
mm-hmm.
Smith got to be good in the second half of that season when Clara was introduced, and then Clara got to be good once Capaldi showed up
mm-hmm.
and nixed any of the romantic tension and insisted that any of the romantic tension be abolished.
Which was good.
Yeah. So I think that... But I'm gonna be sad to see Capaldi leave, because he's such a phenomenal actor, and I really wish I could have seen what he could have done, like with a fresh writer.
No, I agree, because he's probably he quickly became one of my favorites of the new series. Like, just one of the highlights of the entire show. I've loved most of what I've seen him in. Even the episodes I don't like, I like his parts.
Yeah. And, I mean, we haven't gotten a bad doctor in the new Who. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I argue, really, the only time we had a bad doctor was Colin Baker. And that actually wasn't his fault either.
I would say, yeah, like, I mean, if you listen to his Big Finish stuff, he's got some really good audio dramas. It is what it is.
Yeah, it's I feel so bad for Colin Baker, because like he's always going to be known as like the least favorite doctor for most people. Like, but you know,
ugliest costume.
But you know what? Here's
story.
The thing. I want to say this about Colin Baker. Is we all still actually, like, if we were in the room with Colin Baker, we would be ecstatic because we were in the room with the doctor. Like, being everyone's least favorite doctor is still, like, it's... I don't know how to explain, like...
No, I know what you're feeling. Because, and I, it's not exactly the same, but it's similar enough. Just a couple weeks ago, I started getting responses from Neil Kaplan on Twitter when I praised his performance as Zarkon in Voltron Legendary Defender. Now, for some of you, though, you might know that before he was Zarkon, Neil Kaplan was the George Lazenby of Optimus Primes.
Which one was
he? He was R.I.D. Optimus Prime. He was the Fox Kids Optimus Prime. That
oh,
was
he
the
was
only. Yeah, he was the one on your shelf behind you.
He was this guy.
He was that Optimus, yeah.
I have the rest of the parts to turn him into, like, the full super thing in a shelf over there. But this is the most underappreciated Optimus form, because I love just the front of the cab of the fire truck Optimus Prime so much.
No, I agree.
This is an amazing Optimus Prime.
And I love Neil Kaplan, but he is, like, the least loved of any version of Optimus Prime, at least with the American fans. He is the least loved.
Well, he's
got to
go up,
like,
against,
Gary
Chalk. He's got to go up against Gary Chalk. He's got to go up against, oh, my God, I'm blanking.
David Kaye. Yeah.
And obviously, you know, he's got to go up the original
Peter Cullen.
Yeah.
The unstoppable Peter Cullen. Yeah, no, I mean, I know he's up against some tough competition, but he is the least loved of any Optimus. But for me, it was, oh my God, Optimus is talking to me on Twitter.
You know, the funny thing is, like, Gary Chalk, I love Gary Chalk. He will never be my favorite Optimus Prime because he's Armada Optimus Prime. And it's Armada.
Yeah.
And the Unicron trilogy is just so bad. But Gary Chalk is always my favorite Transformers voice actor, along because he's Optimus Primal, who is, in my opinion, a much better character than Optimus Prime.
Depends on which Optimus we're talking about.
Well, to be fair, like, the Optimus Primes, who you're probably going to say are, like, animated, where his characterization was heavily based off of the Optimus Primal characterization.
Because that's a favorite of mine.
Because that's, you know, the Optimus Primal character is not the leader of the Autobots, or he's not the leader of the Maximals even, he's a random ship captain.
So, honestly, my favorite Optimus Prime was never voiced at all, because he's the comic book version. Because IDW Optimus is sometimes self-doubting, sometimes overly zealous religious leader, which makes him interesting.
See, I love Optimus Primal as a character because he is, as we have this conversation again, just sits there completely lost.
I'm sorry again.
Well,
but finish my thought, is because Optimus Primal is a random scientific survey ship captain who is thrust into this position of having to save everything. And so, like, his constant self-doubt and, like, he's unsure. He's not, like, you know, like, and this is, you know, again, this
is...
Yeah,
they totally stole that with animated.
Right.
They totally stole
right.
that.
They totally lived that for animated. And that's, like, but that's why it's, like, Optimus Primal, like, and, like, I love the scene in Beast Machines where he's looking at the giant statue of Optimus Prime and, like, in like the buried city, and like, oh, it's so great. It's like he's trying to hold himself up to, like, this great leader and, like, trying to, like, be the guy because he has to be the guy because there's nobody else left. And it's, yeah, I have opinions about things.
That's great.
For me, it's the same thing. It's like, okay, here's the least loved Optimus, and it would be the same thing with Colin Baker. He's the least loved doctor, but I'd still love to.
He's still the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
it's like, yeah, you're the worst at being amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're the absolute worst of, but you're still in the category of,
That's like being the worst Ghibli movie. You know, it's like you're.
What is the worst Ghibli movie?
So to get us back on track.
Well,
thanks, Ken.
I'm delaying us a little so I can get stuff up in front of me. See,
Worst.
Sometimes I delay us for a reason so I can get ahead of where I am right now, and get the information up on my screen.
See, I do that ahead of time.
The worst Ghibli movie would be Pompoko 2, More Raccoon Scrotums.
I'd still watch it.
Aren't they tanukis? All right. So
that bingo card.
That's... All right. So to get us back on...
The worst.
To get us back on... Speaking of the worst... I don't know if he's necessarily the absolute worst, but because I can think of worse people. But let's move on to the convention scene where we're going to talk about things not to do. Things not to do. You see, if you are working for a vendor at another convention, you should not, A, steal from another vendor and walk off with like $20,000 of their merchandise. You should especially not do that when there are security cameras located around the convention center you're in. And you also might not want to do that when you run your own convention. That brings us to Frank Patz, the organizer of EternalCon, who at last October's New York Comic Con, who he had been working for Michael Carbonaro's vintage movie posters booth. And he, so Eagle Moss, who is a toy manufacturer, had a table at New York Comic Con, and $20,000 worth of their stuff was stolen. And I knew about this back in October, but we didn't report on it because we didn't have anything to say other than, hey, some guy got robbed. But the so police working with the Javits Center security, Javits Center being the place where New York Comic Con was held, have reviewed the tapes and found the footage revealing, again, EternalCon organizer Frank Patz walking off with it. Now, apparently, Patz has returned the items. He was initially charged with grand larceny and possession of stolen goods. Patz has apparently returned the merchandise, and New York police accepted an adjournment in contemplation of dismissal, which means as long as he doesn't do anything for the next 6 months, and since he returned everything, the charges are going to be dismissed and stricken. So he's not going to be like officially charged with anything, but. He's not going to have anything on his record, mostly because he returned the stuff and probably because Eagle Moss didn't want to keep having to deal with this. But because of that, he has now officially been banned from all Reed Pop events because Reed Pop organizes New York Comic Con. And he has also been permanently banned from the Javits Center, which hosts multiple conventions in New York. And I got to say, if I was a convention runner... and I was known to have stolen from a vendor, this might not be a good sign for my own convention and trying to sell my vendor tables. I'm just saying.
That's not going to reflect well on your comment.
The guy walked out with 20 grand in like prototypes and items. Like, what?
Yeah. It's just going to tell people that, like, you're more likely to steal from your own convention.
Right. How do you trust that guy? If you're a vendor at his con.
You don't.
Yeah, you can't trust him to leave your stuff. I wouldn't. Would you?
Right.
Would you?
And since he's banned from the Javits Center, like, I don't know if EternalCon's ever going to be
No, they're not. They're I forget where they're being held, but they're a much smaller show. They could probably not afford the, but it like there are multiple conventions that are held at the Javits Center, and so it pretty much means he can't go to any major con in New York.
I'd say, well, he's not going to be going to any of them now. So.
Yeah,
yeah.
He could go to one of the smaller ones that's held elsewhere. Maybe BurrowCon. Read some lorem ipsum text. That's a callback.
Wow.
Go read our news site.
Wow. That's so dumb.
Yeah.
So dumb. And he's literally on camera walking off with the stuff.
Yep.
Like, just don't do that.
It questions, like, the amount of logic he has to run his convention. Like,
yeah, it's like what? I believe 90% of our reaction to the story has been like, what? Huh?
Pretty much.
Why?
I'm just shaking my head.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if we have any other discussion to say that, you know, man,
no,
this guy should not be managing an event.
No.
You know, there are other people, though, who shouldn't be managing events, Ken.
Well, there's some people who really should get their stuff together, including STX Brazos Valley Comic Con, whose guests are getting charged for their hotel rooms months after the convention actually happened.
Oh.
There's been Eisner nominated artist Sarah Richard found out that had happened when she was hit with a $378 charge to her credit card suddenly. Oof. And this is all because of the convention not paying their hotel, because the convention center and the hotel were separate things. And so the convention never paid the hotel at all. So the hotel had no other choice than to charge whatever cards they were given. So if a guest put down a card for incidentals on a room, they got charged with that card. And the
yeah.
whole thing is just a sucky mess.
Yeah, and we've gotten other reports from some of the agents of the other guests there that this has happened to them too. There have been rumors that, I mean, like, we know they didn't pay the hotel, but who knows if they paid their venue either. It's honestly, it sounds like STX Brazos Valley Comic-Con or Brazos Valley STX Comic-Con or Brazos Valley Comic-Con, all depending on which one of their official pieces of merchandise or sites you look at. Maybe that's their trick. They're going to try to confuse us with as many names as possible so we can't track what they're doing. There are guests, there are reports of some of the guests not getting their guarantees paid also from the convention. I've seen the photo of the IOU that the con promoter, I forget his name, it's Ben something, wrote to one of the guests because he couldn't pay he wrote out an IOU on a piece of paper, and that guest has still not gotten their guarantee paid. Texas seems to have a rash of these like flyby like canceled shows, but this is really, I think this is a sign of really part of the problem in the convention industry right now, where a lot of these guys are trying to come up with these like make a lot of money running a Comic-Con style event, and they're bringing in all these guests with high guarantees, and that they don't have the attendance, like they don't understand that you have to build before you can actually start paying out that money. Like, it's,
you pretty much have to build a small community that is guaranteed to go to your convention before you have the convention,
right? And it's, yeah. I mean, I take a look at something like, so there is a small Comic-Con that is located about half hour from me, called KokomoCon in Kokomo, Indiana. They don't pay to bring in big guests. They don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's a one-day show. They don't pay to bring in guests. They have a vendor room. It's inexpensive to attend. They right now bring in about 1,200 people in not a big town. Like their attendance last year was 1,200 something, and they're financially stable as a show, because they're not wasting their money on these, like, and they could probably afford to bring in like a guest or two with big guarantees. But what happens is you get these guys who think they're going to bring in like 10,000 people and to be able to pay off all these big guarantees and guests, and because they see dollar signs. They just see dollar signs.
It's like all they understand are, you know, the big giant San Diego Comic Cons, and that's the only thing they can possibly imagine.
Right.
They don't understand Kokomo cons or Ever cons.
Right.
And like, they also don't understand that, like, to get to that size, like, you need to build yourself up a few years.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You don't automatically start out at 20,000 people.
Like, we saw this with Denny Toll's Titletown Comic Con folded before it ever happened, where he tried to go this route and found he couldn't pay things long ahead of time. And that thankfully collapsed before anybody needed to get paid. But mm-hmm. we see this time and time again. It's where the magical 20,000 number comes from, mm-hmm. which is this magic number that everyone says they're going to get their first year and then doesn't materialize. It's like it's very rare that a show will take off in its first year. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's very, very rare. And so you need like and this is why anybody who's ever like got asked for advice on how to run a convention, it's the first thing that anyone will tell you is be prepared to lose every dollar you put into it. Be prepared mm-hmm. to cover everything, because there is a good chance your con will make $0. Like, even a successful con long term will likely lose a lot of money its first year. If you can't afford to lose the money, don't run a con.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it, and this is clearly a situation where, and the funny thing is with STX Brazos Valley Comic Con, this was, I think, their second year. So he knew exactly what his numbers were going to be like. Like, there's, it's always a gamble on your first year, because you never really know how good your advertising was or how great you actually, like, got word out there until people come in the door. But this is his second year. He knew exactly how bad things were his first year. And he didn't readapt his, like, budget and schedules. Like, he didn't readapt for that. He just mm-hmm. did the same thing again and still couldn't pay for it.
Well, that makes me wonder, like, did this, like, not paying the hotel and venue, like, not paying the hotel thing happen their first year?
Well, I don't think it, I think we would have heard about it if it had.
Exactly. So that's why, like, if they're,
I think he decided,
they were able to pay, like, the first year, why not this year?
Well, I think it's a case of he lost all the money again, got further into debt, and then said, hey, I'm not going to pay this.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I think it's a case of running away. You know, it's, it's insane. The problem is that too many people are trying to launch too many events in too many mm-hmm. places, and it's just oversaturated. Texas is a good example. Another good example of an oversaturated market is, say, Northern California.
Now, that's convenient you'd mention that, because yakety schmackety doo, what a great transition. Crunchyroll, the popular anime streaming service, formerly a fan sub company turned legit streaming service, announced that because they have, what was it, a million subscribers, that to celebrate, they are starting their own Crunchyroll Expo. It's going to be August.
God, what lazy bastards, just taking their name for their online product and tossing Expo at the end. What kind of assholes do that?
And the Crunchyroll Expo, which will be held in August of this year, is going to be at the Santa Clara Convention Center in Northern California. You know, the Northern California, where pretty much all of California's anime conventions and
no,
sci-fi.
No, they're plenty in Southern California, too, but Northern California's got a glut.
Yeah, Northern California has a glut, though. There's a lot. There's a lot.
Yeah, it's, so, let's think about, so, it's, I think it's August 23rd through 25th? Are those
25th through 27th.
25th through 27th, okay, yeah, it's, I said my dates off earlier. So August 25th through 27th. That is, first off, so that's in Santa Clara?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's about a two-hour drive from Sacramento, where Sac Anime is happening a week later.
Mm-hmm.
Sac Anime is not a small convention. I mean,
no.
they're well established, actually.
Put up five-digit attendance numbers. So Sac Anime is a week after that. Also, a week after that is a big science fiction show in, well, not a, I don't know if it's big or not, but there is a science fiction con in San Francisco also the same weekend as Sac Anime. So those are both a week after. Mm-hmm. And on the same day as the Crunchyroll Expo is MagWest, which is MagFest's first West Coast convention. And the best part about MagWest being held the same weekend as the Crunchyroll Expo is it is being held in a building adjacent, as in they share a wall. You still have to go outside to cross between the two, but they share a structural wall with MagWest, and they are happening at the same time. Also, there's a football stadium right there, and it's the preseason for the NFL, and they play games there, and so there's a good chance that there's a game happening that weekend, which will eat up all the parking. So,
yeah.
I don't know for sure if there's a game that weekend there, but either way, like
carpool, I guess.
I mean,
yeah.
MagWest.
Wow.
And, like, MagWest is literally happening next door. Like, if you drilled through a wall, you could connect the two events.
I'm just wondering, like, how many attendees are gonna like accidentally get into the like the wrong convention.
Walk into the wrong building. Yeah, no, you go out to lunch, right? You come back, you walk in the wrong door. Oh crap, this is the wrong con. Like, I mean, in some ways it's nice. In some ways, like, maybe you could see it being like if the two events work together and synergistically, like, created like a discount badge if you bought like a secondary badge, you get into both or something. But like, this never goes well when like two cons are right next to it. This never goes well. Something always, I mean, and again, Northern California really doesn't need another anime con. Like, out of all the markets to bring a new con into,
Northern Cali, yeah, it's huge.
Like, the Bay Area is just full of cons. Like, if, like, my God, like, I mean, there's
not a great plan. Not a great plan.
No. Go to animecons.com. Pull up California and just look at that schedule. And, like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, because SAC Anime happens twice a year. Like, you got Kraken Con. You've got, like, all of this stuff is just right there. Like, these are not
great
people. Like, and again, a week off of SAC Anime. A week off of SAC Anime.
Where is AX? Isn't that in Northern California? Anime Expo?
Oh, no, Anime Expo's in L.A.
Yeah, Anime Expo's
okay.
In L.A. Which is, for all intents and purposes, in a different state for those of us. Like, when we think about... We're in the Midwest, so, like, you know,
right.
We think about...
No, I get it. Like, geographically, yeah, it's far
enough. It would be
away.
Like... It would be, yeah, it, like... it's a different market, but it's still, like... Don't run a con there. Like, I'm sorry, Crunchyroll, you want to run a convention? Anywhere. Actually, I can't think of anywhere on the West. The West Coast is just glutted with cons.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot think of any city on the West Coast where I would want to start a con. Like,
see, I always get paranoid when anime distributors start trying to go outside their realm of expertise, because it always backfires.
Well, okay, so,
and maybe I'm being a little overly harsh, but it always seems to backfire for me.
I will.
Genion entered. Oh, sorry.
I just wanted to say that it's actually they've hired Left Field Media to run the con, and Left Field Media, which is of course a subsidiary of Urban Expositions, which is a subsidiary of Clarion Events. Left Field Media runs a handful of, like, they just bought a large chunk of Rose City Comic Con. They have they took over Awesome Con. Like, I think Ben Penrod's still actually running Awesome Con, but they bought a large chunk of Awesome Con a few years ago. Like, they've got their hands in a handful of events, in about like five or six events right now. Like, they're launching a new like Five Points show in New York. So it's Left Field Media is full of, and like one of the people who runs Left Field Media used to be an exec with Reed Pop. So it's their experienced people who actually would be putting the actual show together. So I'm not worried about the show being poorly run. It's just
Right. I always worry about, on a larger scale, Like, whenever anime distributors start going outside their realm of expertise, it's more, it never seems to be great for the company itself in the long run. For example, like, Genion Entertainment, before they went under, they weren't just putting out shows, they were putting out soundtracks for all of their shows, including really obscure ones that no one gave a crap about. An even worse example, and as much as I hate to drag them, because I loved them to death, but ADV...
I was going
to
say ADV. With Sin.
ADV was, they were printing t-shirts, they were making plushies, they were printing manga in addition to doing anime distribution.
Tried to go into production where they co-produced Sin, the anime based off the video game flop. Because nothing says a better idea like sponsoring a series based off of a video game that is terrible. But it's like, I love Matt Greenfield to death. I think he's a great guy, but they were not good business decisions. And they went from being the largest anime company in the world to shattering.
But you can see that now, like that they, and now you can see they learned from that lesson, because the remains of ADV became the Sentai Filmworks subsidiaries with, Section 23 with all of its subsidiaries like Sentai, Made in Japan, and Kraken, and all they do are movies now. They don't do other crap. And That's kind of what I'm worried about with Crunchyroll. Now, they don't do physical releases. They usually lease that out to, they used to work with other companies, but now that they're actually technically a part of Funimation, they and Funimation are kind of merged, so I don't know. I worry. I think that this is a bad business decision, and it could be very bad in the long run. And when they monopolize so much of the anime streaming scene, it's just...
Mm. Yeah, especially since Hulu's backing out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Hulu was losing... Yeah, that's the sad thing about Hulu backing out, because Hulu's a much more stable platform. And Hulu's only keeping the popular shows.
I preferred getting my stuff on Hulu because for some reason I've heard people with the opposite problem, but for me, Crunchyroll doesn't work well for me.
I've heard a lot of people talk about how Crunchyroll buffers all the time, which is why I think Crunchyroll Expo will just randomly pause and the attendees will all have to stand still and wait while they all look in a circle spinning until the convention can resume.
But it's also the only platform that some shows are on.
Right.
So there's still no home video release of the anime Hero Man, and Stan Lee produced that. Mm-hmm. He's actually in that.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
of course he is.
It's just frustrating. So
Crunchyroll, please don't do this. Crunchyroll, change your mind. Also, what is with conventions? And that, like, Crunchyroll's like, oh, we're gonna run a con in less than a, like, dear Lord, I've already applied for all of my like August and September cons for tabling.
Right.
Like the next con, the only con, like literally, like now I'm thinking about what I'm doing in October and November right now. And I expect I won't be able to apply for November shows till like maybe April, but like I plan on applying to my October stuff in March. The show I want to go do in September, I already put in my application for the artist. Like, I don't know if I'm going to get it or not. It's a very competitive show that I'm trying to get into, so that's why I'm not going to name it. But I'm like, what?
Yeah.
It's such a weird decision. I don't like being negative. I really don't. I worry about the anime industry.
This smacks of what I see also with pop culture shows, though. Like they tend to announce, like we see this time and time again, where Title Town announced with hardly any lead time. Of course, they canceled. But like when Awesome Con announced their shows, it was long after everyone else's like stuff. When they tried to do their expansion, which obviously failed, which. I don't know if that's related to why Ben Penrod sold off the con to Left Field Media. I only ever see that with pop culture shows. And so anime cons for that to be an anime convention, releasing their dates that, like, with no establishment that close, like, I'm like, you don't launch a show without announcing your date, like, at least a year in advance.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, especially in a crowded con scene, because everyone's trying to make up their damn mind. Also, who the heck purposely launches a con adjacent to another con?
Mm-hmm.
I can think of other examples where it's happened, and it's never worked out well for the people who did it, in my experience. It usually works out well for one of them and not for the other.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we're saying is, Crunchyroll, please just don't do this. It's crazy.
Please don't let this... Well, they're going to do it, and it's going to flop, and then Crunchyroll will fold, and you'll never get to see Hero Man again.
Gosh dang it.
Oh, but we should move on to the mailbag.
We should.
All right, in normal time, even. All right, moving into the mailbag. The first thing in the mailbag that I will pull out of this digital version of the mailbag on my handy dandy device here comes from Brenda Gibner.
Yay.
Subject: shameless con promotion. Hey guys, I remember you had said that if we had a con to promote, we can do it here. That's right, we have said that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we keep saying that, but we do say that. This con is near and dear to me, as I loved working for it. Wild Wild West Con is Arizona's steampunk convention and is March 3rd through 5th at Old Tucson Studios. The theme this year is Cthulhu for President, and we will have performances from The Cog is Dead, Frenchie and the Punk, etc. Also appearances by Thomas Wilford, Steampunk Boba Fett, as well as contestants from Steampunked. Tickets are still available at wildwestcon.com. So, thank you.
Sounds pretty cool.
If you're in Arizona and would like to go to Wild Wild West Con, you should do that, because it is a place that exists, and steampunk conventions are fun. And I'm
it
just
does
saying,
sound pretty cool.
I
want just...
to go. I watched all of Steampunked in like a night. It was really good. So I'm a little jealous.
I'm just saying, as an author of a steampunk comic, maybe they could one day consider inviting. Okay. Oh, we've got more in the mailbag. Who's got next? Nick, you've got
next. All right, next up, we got one from Langland. Subject: Holy Legos, Batman. Hey, guys, so I checked out the Lego Batman movie, and I want to write a little bit about it. I want to say right now, it is effing awesome. I mean, holy Legos, guys. This movie made so many awesome pop culture references that I had a little nerdgasm, and it was awesome. I laughed my blank off. And there was never a dull moment. This movie is way, 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 way better than any of the crap we have gotten from the failed DC Extended Universe films. So with that said, I personally would love it if WB tried to make more LEGO superhero movies like these. Maybe a LEGO Superman or LEGO Justice League would be cool. I think with... talented comedians who gave their voices to these Lego characters, we could see some really fun stuff in the future. And I just love how all the hours went to making this movie paid off. So to sum it off in a few words, this movie is epic. 5 stars out of 5, 10 out of 10 rating. It was just that good. That's all I have. Peace out, homies.
Yeah.
Drops fictional mic.
Don't drop microphones.
Don't drop microphones. Expensive. They're expensive.
Very expensive. Listen to Greg Universe, darn it. No, I agree. It was,
this
mean,
is a microphone. Goofed. You should not drop this. Well, this one you could probably drop because this is a Pile SM58 that I paid $13 for. So you could drop this one, but be prepared to pay me $13.
But yeah, that was.
If you drop a mic at a show, it's probably like a nice one, like an SM, like a Shure SM58, and those cost $100. If you drop one of those mics, be prepared to pay the show $100. Don't drop microphones.
Yeah, the
I caught that. off camera.
I mean, but we already goosed. It's good. Go see it. Gosh dang it. Go see it. That's really all there is to say.
Yeah. Ken, you've got the next.
I do, from the Random Ramblings Man. Subject is lightweight today. Good cold evening again, my fellow nerds with ties. As I write to you, it seems Massachusetts, it's finally getting the snow everybody else got already. Oddly enough, I don't see that as a bad thing. This week's mailbag contribution will be a lighter than usual for once. I'm still thoroughly interested in Riverdale, even though I still firmly put it in the bad category.
I like it!
Ramblings Man got angrier than he probably should have at the teaser for the fourth episode.
I haven't seen the teasers. I just watched the episodes when they air. I like them.
It must be lonely, Trey.
A lot of people like it. The ratings are good.
I wonder how many of them are hate watching it like I am.
I'm not.
Oh, well.
You and I don't follow the same people on Tumblr, is what this tells me, because I know that Candace Meeks, producer of the My Immortal web series and No Boys Dorm, is super into Riverdale because she blogs about it all the time.
Lots of good people like bad things. That doesn't mean anything.
I as an Archie Comics fan from childhood, like Riverdale. Although I will say, it was a little bit sacrilegious a couple episodes ago when they had Josie and the Pussycats playing a version of Sugar Sugar, which is canonically a song written by Archie, but he didn't start helping them write songs until the episode after that. So, I'm just saying.
God damn it.
I just want Sabrina the Teenage Witch to show up.
My disinterest in continuing Shadowhunters is matched only by my joy of the return of Samurai Jack. Fun fact, the night I watched the premiere of Samurai Jack was also the same night I went to go see Osmosis Jones.
Why?
That's really cool. Here's hoping the revival is as good as the original was. Would you folks be interested to know that I have never read a lick of Tolkien, and that the only Tolkien adaptions I've ever seen are the Hobbit trilogy? If you think I should correct this, let me know how, eh? That's all for this fortnight. Until next time, stay random, my friends.
The Lord of the Rings is 1,000 times better than The Hobbit.
Go watch Lord of the Rings if you're going to watch the movies. They're better movies.
Yeah,
by a lot.
Watch the original Lord of the Rings movies. They're way better and not so, like, hash and bash. And there's a lot of stuff that's, like, from the actual books in them rather than The Hobbit, where it was kind of slapped together and... half the time.
I will say with The Hobbit, the one reason why I think we should all forgive Peter Jackson for The Hobbit is because the studio insisted it was a trilogy, and he had the choice of either making two movies, and he wanted to do it in two movies, which I think The Hobbit could have worked in two movies because it was supposed to be The Hobbit plus Silmarillion stuff, and that would have worked as two films. Three films was too much. I enjoyed them, but three films was too much. He literally was just filling it in because the studio said that if he didn't make a third Hobbit movie, they were going to pay someone else to make a movie that would take place between the two. So,
and in the first place, the whole the Hobbit movies were originally supposed to be directed by Guillermo del Toro, and he backed down. And when Peter Jackson came in, he pretty much had to change everything.
Yeah.
To fit what he like his vision, so
yeah, so it's I want to make sure that we don't get mad at Peter Jackson for what happened. I will say I don't understand the extended cuts of the Hobbit movies because they already are the way too long subject.
I like a lot of the Hobbit movies.
I like the extended cuts of the Lord of the Rings films.
Oh, they're phenomenal.
They're not required viewing, but if you like the original cuts, then yeah, they add a lot.
Yeah, I'm gonna say the Lord of the Rings, as I said earlier, the Lord of the Rings is better than The Hobbit. I mean that both about the books and about the films. The Hobbit is a great book. It's a great kids' book. The Lord of the Rings, which is really, if you break it down at core, the same story as The Hobbit, just darker and more adult. you know, because the journey. Anyways,
different, but whatever.
Well, there. No, it's don't get me wrong. I love The Hobbit as a book. I think it's a great book. It's actually, I'm going to admit, I've never read the entirety of. So I never read The Hobbit, but I had it read aloud to me as a child. So I know every detail of the book. And I had the first two of the Lord of the Rings books read aloud to me as a child, but never actually read or had read to me Return of the King. I read The Fellowship myself.
Well, what I am going to recommend to you and Ramblings is that is what I do, which is I use audible.com, which is an audiobook site. And I am going to recommend, or like you can find them at your library. That's where I first found my versions of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, unabridged versions of the audiobooks, as read by Rob Inglis, who is a Shakespearean actor. And he does a wonderful job reading the books aloud, sings all the songs that are there in the books. I mean, does different voices for all the characters so that you can just like differentiate who they are. Don't confuse this for the audiobooks of the audio play.
Mm-hmm.
Because they did like a radio play version of The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit once, and all it is it's just like the dialogue between the characters. You don't get the background of like where they are, what they're doing, what's going on. And you really do need that background of like, here's the political situation going on, and this is why these characters are acting like this.
See, that sounds like a preferable version.
I keep forgetting we have a massive Tolkien nerd on the show now, because I'm so used to, like, again, you have to understand, this is a, so nice to have someone who knows way more about this than me. Oh,
well, and
so
I just finished reading Tolkien's Unfinished Tales.
Yeah.
So, like, Narn and Húrin is, like, still fresh in my eye, fresh in my mind, and, like, Tor, and...
I need to follow your example, though, and get that audiobook, because I find reading the songs to myself to be physically painful. I'm going to be honest, I can't do it.
It's really hard, because, if you just read them, you're pretty much just reading them as a poem, which is not how they're supposed to go. They're actual songs. Actual country, songs. And so I don't know if the way that Rob Inglis sings them is the way that Tolkien imagined them, but it does give you a better sense of, how they should go.
Yeah, I prefer that.
I think what I would say is that it all depends on how much time you have to invest, because obviously, you know, an unabridged audiobook, which is, if you're going to do an audiobook, you should do the unabridged version. That is, you know, you're talking hours and hours and hours of time versus, you know, the amount of time it takes you to listen to one of those books, you could watch the entire extended trilogy. I'm betting. Just based on how long audiobooks of novels of that length are on average.
Let me look it up real quick.
Do it. But so I will say that if you have time, obviously, I think that you should go through the books and go through the films. Actually, I'm going to say this. I'm going to say you should watch the movies first. And I'm going to
say,
because the one thing that's going to happen is that if you list, because they had to cut a lot of stuff because they had the exact opposite problem that The Hobbit did. The Hobbit, they ran out of material and had to throw more stuff in. With The Lord of the Rings,
it's a really short book.
Yeah. With The Lord of the Rings, because there's so much to the text, and that's why, again, the extended versions, I believe, are the best versions of the Lord of the Rings version of the trilogy. This is what I would do. Lord of the Rings, if you watch it on DVD, I don't know about the Blu-rays, but on the DVD, the extended cuts are each split into two halves.
I only own
on each disc.
Cuts,
The extended cuts, I believe, are, I think on the small packaging, it's like one half is on one side of the disc. It's a two-sided disc, but on the big fancy package, it's two discs. because there are two releases of the extended cuts on DVD. I don't know about the Blu-ray release. And what I would do is, if you watch you should watch the extended cuts and then just effectively take a movie, like, consider watching each half as watching a movie, because of the length, because you're talking over 3 hours for each movie if you watch the extended cuts. And so, like, when I watch those, I watch half the movie, and then I watch the other half of them. Like, I consider it six movies, not three. It's... I would watch that first, because while I do recommend going through... I've only read the first two books, but I do recommend going through the books, because they are very good. But what's going to happen...
They'll fill in the gaps.
They'll fill in the gaps. True. But you'll also, if you go either listen or read the books first, you're going to be looking for things that never show up.
Yep, and you'll be more disappointed.
And you'll be more disappointed that
true facts.
I can think of Tom Bombadil. Anyways, or Shelob getting moved.
I hate Tom Bombadil. I'm glad I didn't.
How dare you?
That's right, Gan.
How dare you? So just looked up.
Yeah. Also, the timeline's different in the movies.
I have the
like a whole decade gets cut out.
I have all the audiobooks up here, and the longest ones are 18 hours.
Yeah, like I said, you could watch the entire extended trilogy within the in less time than it takes you to listen to one of the books. So
yeah, but
you should do both,
because. Yeah, I would definitely watch the movie first, let the books fill in the gaps. You can try reading it for yourself. I just recommend the audiobooks because Tolkien's writing, and a lot of people who wrote at that time period, are pretty dry in their writing, so it's a little hard to choke down all at once, whereas with the audiobook, it's a little easier to handle.
Well, and Tolkien was kind of busy reinventing a genre, so...
Well, and being a professor and inventing a language languages.
My point is that fiction always, creative works always build on what came before them. And so when you reinvent the wheel, you start out with something like a Model T, not a sixth generation Mustang.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I'm saying.
Because fun fact... The romance between Aragorn and Arwen is not a thing in the books. Only mentioned in the appendix.
In the appendix.
It's there. It's just in the appendix.
And you we understand why it got put into the film, because it's a beautiful story, but
it's also really nice funny. To have a character with two X chromosomes who has lines.
Yeah. Even though she technically wasn't the one that took Frodo when he was sick and whatever, I could get really pedantic.
We
about
all
this.
Know, but there are changes. And again, hey, Shelob's in a whole different place.
I know.
Anyways, I will say I was happy when Legolas showed up in the Hobbit films, because I was like, that's right, he's a friggin' Mordor elf, not Mordor.
Mirkwood.
Mirkwood is what my mouth wanted to say. This is me today. Doctor Who, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, and Legolas is a Mordor elf now. That's just an orc. That's just an orc.
Even though he was never named in the books, neither was Thranduil. He was just the Elven King. He would have technically been there because he was
Lee
Pace's alive
eyebrows got around a lot that year.
This reminds me of How It Should Have Ended's video with who did that? I don't. And then they cut over to Legolas. And he's like, I don't know. I'm not even supposed to be in this story. And then
but he is, because he's an immortal being, and they were at his place.
You're not immortal.
Well, no, but compared to man.
Yeah, comparatively, yeah.
I mean, there's lots of stuff that's cut out of, the films, an entire decade at the beginning of Fellowship.
But we could probably create a whole new podcast just to discuss Tolkien.
Yeah. If you feel like doing that again, let me know. You can do that all on your own. Oh, we've got a letter from Arkhamize, though, so Nick, go jump on that.
That's probably good. All right. Next up, subject may be read aloud on mailbag. Hi, nerds and ties. Longtime listeners, first-time writer this year, anyway. Gosh dang it, Arkhamize. Firstly, welcome to the team, Gen. Smiley face. Sad to hear Professor Fur will no longer be a co-host, but I wish him all the best. Secondly, sorry I've been lax on my mail. What?
I was just saying, yeah, Fur's not listening. He didn't listen when he was on the show.
This is true. Sorry I've been lax on the mail since post-Nerd and Tie Expo. Sad to hear the expo won't make a return this year due to circumstances and demolition, but I hope we can reconvene again in the future!
In the future!
I was hoping you'd do that.
Thirdly, since it's that designated romantic time of year, what's your favorite couple shows to watch with your spouse or significant other or best friend?
Supergirl.
We've been watching lately.
Cardcaptor Sakura.
Eric got me hooked on The Chase, the game show.
And currently the Fate franchise, but anyway.
Supergirl.
Fourthly, Gen, can you forward the following to Shameless Otaku?
Okay, Gen, you now have to read the rest of this letter.
Well, just tell him that I finally watched the second episode of Macross Delta. That is all. Thanks, Gen. Have a great 2017, everyone. Arkhamize. Yeah, I'll let him know next time I see him.
We are not your mail service, Arkhamize.
No, but funny story. I was last week I was out getting printer ink at Best Buy, and who do I run into?
Arkhamize?
Shameless Otaku.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I ran.
Legitimately, go tell him.
Like, I ran into them.
Sorry, Gen.
Like, hey.
Gen, you now have a mission. You have to. You are in the right area. You need to go find Shameless Otaku right now.
No, he's 20 minutes away.
That's a lot closer than he is to me.
I know, but. That's a lot closer than he is to Arkhamize. Like, hey, we should watch the Gundam VHSs you gave me, Nick.
0080.
So we did that, and that was excellent.
It was a sad, sad show.
Oh, Bernie.
You guys need some hamburgers?
We got that. We finally got that. Oh,
all the Gundam fans in the audience just called me an awful person.
That show.
Oh, dear.
That was an experience.
I haven't watched it because I've never watched an entire episode of any Gundam series.
0080, I honestly think even on its own, you might still appreciate it. I mean, it's...
I don't have an opinion to disagree or agree.
It's a six-episode OVA about children and war.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've said.
And children befriending space Nazis.
No.
There are too many real Nazis in the world for me to want to deal with space Nazis now.
Fair.
All right. So that gets us through the mailbag and on to our final portion, our final regular segment of the show, and that is the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge.
Vomit Hat Steve Challenge.
The Vomit Hat Steve Challenge, for those of you who are unaware, is the part of the show where I pull out a book and I read a random sentence from it. And the challenge to you, the listener, is to guess what book I'm reading from. And I stick with the same book until somebody guesses it. If you guess correctly, you get included in the Hall of Awesome. The benefits of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. 1, you get your name read aloud every episode. 2, you get your name listed on our website. 3, nothing else. What is wrong with you? We are poor. Please sponsor an episode. The current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Archimedes, Zero, Ren and Senti, Cheesy McDamu, Krista, Slither ED, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings, Man, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lilisaurus, Paper Godzilla, Cavsy, The Minnesota Librarians, and Sean Orange. If I said any of your names wrong, I'm sorry. I was trying to be fast. And we were reading from the same book for the last several months, and someone's finally guessed it, and it was the Minnesota Librarians have come back yet again, I think determined to make sure that they guess more books than anybody else. And it is the book I'd been reading up for a while was Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell by Susanna Clarke. And you should read that and go watch the TV adaptation that is on Netflix.
Susanna Clarke.
But that, of course, means I needed to go find a new book before this episode. And so I'm going to do I've got the book down here off camera. So those of you watching on YouTube can't cheat. Because we had that one episode where you could sort of see the book. And yet nobody guessed it right after that. But anyways, the sentence from the book that I'm going to read is... Here we go. Mind if I walk in with you? If you know what book that's from, go to nerdandtie.com/contact, click on the form, and tell us. Or if you have anything else you want to say, if you want to ask, you know... Why isn't Gen wearing glasses this episode? Why is Nick wearing glasses this episode? Why does Trey never wear glasses in any episodes? The answer to that one is that I have 20/20 vision. But you should ask anyways. Go to nerdandtie.com, click on the contact form, fill it in, do that up. Or you can leave us a voicemail at area code 414-375-0480 and make a call, and we'll play your audio on the show. Probably, unless you say something obscene, and then we won't. Then we'll just listen to it, and I'll sample it, and I'll put it in a song, and then I'll make $1 million on it. Yeah.
I just wanted to be Gendo. I'm sorry. Anyway.
And we believe you. Or do we? Or do we not?
I have the potential to be the worst anime dad. Anyway, let
us... Don't we all? Deep down inside, wasn't the worst anime dad the friend we made along the way?
What? All right, this show has gone on too long. It has been another lovely fortnight here at Nerd and Tie. I am still Nick Izumi.
I'm Trey Doran.
I'm Gen Proc.
And remember, you can subscribe to us on Stitcher, on iTunes, on the Google Play Store, and anything that can take an RSS feed. Imagine you can subscribe to us on YouTube. Nerd and Ties back in the name of the channel again. And you should do all that things so we can do the more things and magic. And
Stuff. And
we put on the opening theme this episode instead of the ending theme. And you can just live with that. Say catchphrase.
Rocking in the free world.
Remember the early episodes where we used to end on this song?
Sort of.